Inside Florida Politics, the essential podcast powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm George Bennett. I am a reporter with the Palm Beach Post and roving podcaster. And today my travels have brought me to Tallahassee, where I'm in the Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau studio with the Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy. Hello, John. Good to see you in person.
George, welcome. Good to have you in the 850.
It's an honor to be in this studio. And also, though, it wouldn't be a complete podcast if we didn't have joining us from Florida's Gulf Coast, the Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor, Zach Anderson.
Good morning, George.
So I'm the only podcaster who has been to all three of the Gatehouse studios. Listeners will remember the historic podcast a few weeks ago where I joined Zach in Sarasota. So now podcasted for the cycle here. We got a lot to talk about this week. Ron DeSantis, governor-elect, sat down for an exclusive interview with me this week in Tallahassee. That's why I'm here. Covered a lot of ground. He said he wants to move quickly on addressing the state's toxic algae problem and cautiously on restoring felon voting rights. We're going to hear some clips of what Ron DeSantis had to say. Also, his thoughts on President Trump's factor, what kind of a factor President Trump was in the recent very close election, what he thinks about Broward Sheriff Scott Israel. Remember during the campaign, he said that if he had been governor, he would have removed Scott Israel after the Parkland shooting. His thoughts on Amendment 4, as we mentioned, the felon voting rights and some other topics. And then we're also, John Kennedy's going to talk a little more about the recent election and some of the reforms that Democrats in Tallahassee want to see enacted. So it'll be a robust discussion here today. But first, I believe I hear some kind of funky royalty-free music playing. John, what does that music mean? Help us out here.
George, that always means it's pick a number time.
That's right. That's the segment on the podcast where each of us puts forward a number, and then later on we explain what that number means in Florida politics. Zach Anderson down in Sarasota, do you have a number for us today, and what is it?
I do. I'm going big and bold today with 138,872.
All right.
Big and precise.
Yeah. 138,872 for Zach Anderson. All right. John Kennedy, what's your number?
George, my number is 9.
Number 9.
Very simple.
Yoko Ono kind of number there. And I am going with 0. My number is 0.
Is 0 a number?
For the purposes of this podcast, 0 is the number, and it's my number this week. To review, and as always, we do encourage note-taking as long as you're not driving a car or operating heavy machinery. We'll go in from lowest to highest. George Bennett, that's me. My number is 0. John Kennedy, who is just arm's length away from me here in the Tallahassee studio, his number is 9. And Zach Anderson coming in with a 138,872. So you want to hang on to the end of the podcast and find out what those numbers mean in Florida politics. First, the election. It's been a few weeks since the election, but Democrats up here in Tallahassee are still perhaps smarting from their narrow losses in the governor's race and U.S. Senate race. Anytime there's a close election, it kind of magnifies every problem there is in the election system. John Kennedy, what were they talking about doing as far as changes that they'd like to see?
Yeah, Georgia, you know, it really does. It depends on your perspective, I guess, how this election turned out. But Democrats who didn't do so well in November, they say the election showed that the state's election system needs major reworking on vote counting and recounting deadlines, how counties enforce state election laws, and basically training for poll workers. But the legislature's ruling Republicans so far, you know, say only modest changes are needed. And county election supervisors, they met earlier this month in Sarasota. Our own Zach was there for that marathon 4-day meeting. But they came up with basically just maybe a few fixes are needed. But from their view, things went smoothly this last election, except in Broward and Palm Beach counties, which struggled to count votes. They lost ballots and then had trouble recounting votes. Now, the House Democrats are vastly outnumbered. There's only 47 of them in a 120-member House. They're still, though, going to try to keep this reform issue alive. The House Democratic leader, Keone McGee, this week, he said that dealing with election problems is the only way for Florida to not be a laughingstock of the nation again. So far, though, there's a vastly different views on what happened in November and how badly the election system is flawed. The Republicans, and it seems most supervisors, they think that any problems, you know, that the epicenter was Broward and Palm Beach. Governor Rick Scott suspended Broward supervisor Brenda Snipes just 10 days after he was finally officially declared the winner over Democratic U.S. Senator Bill Nelson. This after it had been thrown out claims that the election fraud was, you know, rampant across these two counties.
Rampant fraud.
And, you know, accusing left-wing activists of trying to tilt the election toward the Democrats. Things, you know, indeed went relatively smoothly in other parts of the state. And while Democrats are calling for these sweeping changes, they so far, they don't want to point fingers at the officials in the two counties where many of them are from. McGee kind of dismissed a chance to evaluate the performance of Brenda Snipes and her counterpart in Palm Beach County, Susan Booker, saying that basically, you know, that's already been taken care of in the media. Democrats are getting a little bit of support for these changes from some of the allied groups like the League of Women Voters, ACLU, and the State Teachers Union. But supervisors, you know, with recommending just a few changes, which they're kind of focusing on trying to make mailing absentee ballots a little bit earlier, allowing officials to begin counting mail-in ballots earlier, and basically giving voters an extra day to correct signature mismatches on ballots. But the Democrats want more state money to upgrade voting equipment, make uniform county elections procedures. All told, you know, there's a divide here as far as what's going to happen. But it seems clear that the House Democrats, anyway, are going to try to keep this issue alive during the legislative session.
And so you're a seasoned veteran of Tallahassee. What chance do you give any of this stuff of passing and actually becoming law?
Yeah, I think very little. I think we're going to see very small fixes, you know, a couple of things, maybe with trying to, you know, bring in some uniform standards, maybe for the county, some training issues. There probably will be some kind of elections bill that the Republicans get behind, but I don't think it's going to be anything as, you know, wide ranging as what the Democrats would like.
All right. Well, there you have some expert preview from John Kennedy, who's been covering Tallahassee for a long time. I got a little preview of Governor-elect Ron DeSantis, who takes office on January 8th. I was able to sit down with him for an exclusive interview this week, and we will be we're going to roll a few clips. We covered a variety of topics. One of the first things I asked him about, and Thomas Cordy, our sound engineer, who is also an accomplished photographer and videographer, is going to be earning his pay this week. We got several clips of Ron DeSantis from our interview. This first one is I asked him. It was a very close election. He won by 0.4 of a percentage point. The Rick Scott Bill Nelson race was even closer. And you remember President Donald Trump came down to Florida twice in the last week of the election to campaign for DeSantis and Rick Scott. And I asked Ron DeSantis, is talking about his race. I said, so what factor, how much of a factor do you think President Trump was? This was the answer he gave me. Go ahead and roll that, Thomas.
There was a lot of interest in right. the election. And I think he was responsible for driving some of that, both for me and against me. I mean, that's just kind of the way these are. So, but I think there were so many different factors, and in a big state with 8+ million votes, I mean, you know, anything, you can look back at anything and say it was important.
What'd you think of that answer, Zach? He wasn't really giving a whole lot of credit to the president there.
Well, he's right. Trump did work for him and against him. It sounds like he's trying to downplay maybe the president's influence a little bit, but I think there's no doubt that Trump was a big factor in the state. He was very visible. He came here. He held a number of rallies for DeSantis. An event recently where the local Democratic Party vice chair conceded that, you know, based on the election results, you have to assume that this is still a kind of a very narrowly pro-Trump state. And so I don't know if, you know, DeSantis seems to be trying to tone things down a little bit as he comes into office. He wasn't really outspoken during the recount, like Rick Scott and alleging fraud and all these things. He's even bringing a Democrat into his administration. So maybe he's just trying to kind of not rile people up too much and just kind of go in with a, you know, sort of a bit of a bipartisan mentality.
Sure. Yeah. Why wave the Trump flag and in Democrats' faces, I guess. You know, another topic that we talked a lot about, and this was a big factor in the campaign, was the toxic algae problem in Florida. And DeSantis, you'll remember in the primary against Adam Putnam, positioned himself very much against the sugar industry. At one point, I think he called Adam Putnam an errand boy for Big Sugar, and was very, DeSantis, you know, said that he talked a lot about addressing water quality problems. And in our conversation, it was very clear, and he named U.S. House member Brian Mast, a Republican from the Palm Beach Treasure Coast area, to head his transition team on environmental issues. And it's very clear that Mast is having a lot of influence. I know one issue that Mast has said as far as these discharges from Lake Okeechobee into the waterways, the Caloosahatchee on the west coast and the St. Lucie River on the east side of Florida that cause all these problems for the communities there. And Brian Mast has said if you lower the Lake Okeechobee level a little bit during the dry season, you won't have the need for these discharges in the summertime when they normally come. And he's gone back and forth with the Army Corps of Engineers or with the South Florida Water Management District and the Army Corps on that issue. Here's Ron DeSantis addressing that issue when I asked him about it. He'll refer to Brian. He's talking about Brian Mast.
They're going to want to do something about it. Now, obviously, we have to deal with the Army Corps on this issue, but Brian feels strongly and I feel strongly that the way they analyze this, that those rules can be updated. Mm-hmm. And I think if you were to do that effectively, you could probably go without having any discharges. And so that's my goal, is to have no discharges. That's one of the things I'm going to raise with the president when I'm in D.C. Tomorrow, because I think it's really important. And I want to accelerate the reservoir. I want to get all these projects moving faster because they take too long. And I think people are frustrated with that. But in the meantime, I don't want to say we have to wait years to get progress. I mean, I want to make as much progress as we can right off the bat.
So there he's saying the reservoir he's referring to is this this big, I think it's 16,000 acres south of Lake Okeechobee, where they want to store water, and that'll allow the water to flow south rather than having to be diverted to the east and west and causing all these problems. But he's saying if you follow this Brian Mast recommendation and lower the lake level, you can even address issues immediately before that reservoir is ready. And the other key person he mentioned is the president. And one of his big selling points was that he has this close relationship with the president. And so the president is going to want to help him out on water and other Florida issues. You think that'll work, John Kennedy?
Well, it's interesting because DeSantis's transition team on the environment met just earlier this week in Tallahassee. And one of the issues that was brought up by one of the members of the transition team was, how about a summit? How about getting Governor-elect DeSantis, outgoing Governor Rick Scott, soon to be a United States Senator, and Donald Trump, President Trump, together somehow to talk about some of these issues involving the lake? And it is interesting because for right now, for DeSantis and fellow Republicans, there seems to be no excuse for not trying to fix this problem, because the stars are aligned as far as all the players involved. So
sort of a big three kind of Yalta conference there. Exactly. on water. So certainly, you know, so he mentioned the lake levels and this reservoir, which are key components of it. DeSantis also told me that he is open to more regulation on pollutants going into the water before it gets to the lake, which is interesting for a Republican. I mean, well, the devil will be in the details, obviously. Another issue that has come up, and Zach, you can talk a little bit about this, is whenever the water quality issues comes up, is the role of septic tanks in the groundwater and the overall water quality. Zach, tell us about a bill that you recently wrote about that's being introduced in the state house.
So a few years ago, the Republican-led legislature in Tallahassee actually passed a septic tank bill that would require homeowners to get septic tank inspections to see, because failing septic tanks are a big problem. They leach human waste into the groundwater and into surface water, and some of the nutrients found in human waste feed some of these toxic algae blooms. And there's an estimate that there, back in 2014, that there were over 500,000 failing septic tanks in Florida leaching this waste and feeding these algae blooms. And the number is probably even higher now. But after they passed this septic tank inspection requirement, the lawmakers got cold feet. There were some costs associated with it for homeowners, and they went and repealed it in 2012, 2 years after they passed it, and Governor Rick Scott signed that repeal bill. And then during the recent election, when we had all these algae problems, he was criticized profusely for his environmental record. And one of the things that they really talked about was that he signed this septic tank inspection repeal bill. Well, now a Republican lawmaker from Bradenton wants to go back and reinstate those inspections. Will Robinson, freshman lawmaker, this is his first year in the legislature, and this is his first bill that he's filing. And it's interesting because he's a conservative Republican, but he really feels like this is an area where you can make a difference. Red tide algae bloom has been a big problem in his community. He's from Bradenton. And just recently, there was a huge fish kill in a place called Robinson Preserve, which is actually named after Will Robinson's family. They contributed the land to create this reserve. And he said that red tide was the number one issue that people talked to him about on the campaign trail. So he's filing this bill to bring back these septic tank inspections. There's a big question, though, about whether, you know, Republicans want to go along with instituting more regulation. You know, Ron DeSantis, even though he's talked a lot about protecting the environment, he's also kind of a conservative Republican. And typically conservative Republicans are against new business and environmental regulations to a large degree. So so far as pushing something like that, it remains to be seen.
Well, as a matter of fact, Zach, I did ask Governor-elect DeSantis about the septic issue. And here's the response he gave me in our interview.
So there's a lot of people that say that if you can convert septic to sewer, you're going to be able to reduce the amount of damage that's done to the waters, particularly in a place like Martin County, where there's a high amount of septic v sewer. And I'm open to that. I mean, I want to look at that. But I don't think that in and of itself would be enough. I mean, you need to have Southern Reservoir. You need to do these key things that obviously require a lot of effort.
So he said he's open to it. He's certainly not shutting it down, but doesn't see it as a major part of the problem. But I think that's an interesting answer given the recent back and forth history.
And there's an important distinction there, George. He said he's open to converting septic to sewer. That's typically what that involves, is paying people to helping people financially get off septic tanks and hook up to sanitary sewer. Often it involves the state subsidizing local governments who are doing a lot of this work. And the question is do you throw a bunch of money at that and force people to get off septics and onto sewer, which a lot of people think is a good idea? Or do you also do what Will Robinson wants to do and force people who have failing septic tanks fix them? And that is more government regulation. What DeSantis is talking about is more just throwing money at it and trying to do that. And the question is should all taxpayers in Florida subsidize people who have failing septic tanks and get them off of septic and onto sewer? Or should you have strong laws and regulations that force people to fix their septic tanks? And those are two very different things. And I would be interested to see if DeSantis would be willing to institute more regulations, because that's a much bigger lift for conservative Republicans in the legislature.
Interesting point. Well, we'll have to see how that plays out. So just moving on to a few other topics that the governor-elect spoke about in our interview. One of them, you remember during the campaign after the Parkland shooting, he said that if he had been governor, he would have removed Scott Israel as sheriff in Broward County. Israel, his agency was criticized for failing to respond to a lot of warning signs from Nicholas Cruz, the gunman there. And then obviously, when the incident itself happened, the response of non-response of the sheriff's deputies. So there was definitely a lot of criticism of Scott Israel. And during the campaign, DeSantis said he would have removed him. I asked him, well, now you're going to be governor in a few weeks. What is Scott Israel's status going to be? Here's what Ron DeSantis had to say about that.
What we want to see is the reports from these investigations that have been done about the Parkland incident and about whatever failings happen. So I've actually been briefed confidentially on some of the facts. There's going to be more facts I need to get, but I'm anticipating taking that, reviewing it, and then if there's corrective action that needs to be taken, then we can take corrective action.
When will that be that you get all the reports you need?
It'll be sometime in early January.
So relatively soon, it looks like he will be making a decision on removing Scott Israel as sheriff from sheriff of Broward County. So I want to keep tabs on that soon after Ron DeSantis takes office. Another issue we spoke about, you know, remember during the campaign, and we spoke about this some during the podcast, education issues are always big. And there was a big distinction between DeSantis and Andrew Gillum, the Democrat, on education issues, where DeSantis is a big proponent of school vouchers and charter schools. And Gillum was more in line with the teachers union and wanting to promote traditional public schools. And I think he used the term phase out, or he was not very specific, but it was clear that he was not a fan of vouchers. So now that Ron DeSantis is going to be governor, I asked him what he wanted to do on vouchers. About 100,000 students, I think, now get vouchers on the main voucher program. Here's what Ron DeSantis had to say about that.
So the if you look at our tax credit scholarship program, we've got about 100,000 kids on that. Right. Low-income families, mostly single moms. There are another 70,000 who applied who did not get, and certainly I think 10,000-20,000 are on a waiting list. So I would like to clear that backlog. And I think the easiest way to do that is to expand the education scholarship accounts that we're using for things like Gardner. We have the scholarship. We have these other mechanisms, which I think have been effective. So we want to do that because I think a lot of low-income families depend on it.
John Kennedy, what do you think of the problem? Think the legislature will be receptive to that?
Yeah, I think this Republican-controlled legislature is really going to sign in on that. Now, you know, this tax credit scholarship program, which he seems to be alluding to, that already has an ability to expand when demand is there. And that was tucked into legislation a few years ago. So it looks like DeSantis right now is calling for an expansion of that expansion. So, you know, we may come back and revisit that. And it does seem like something that the legislature would endorse.
Now, another big issue, and we spoke about this last week on the podcast, Zach, during your marathon election supervisors conference that you attended, is Amendment 4 that was approved by 64.6% of voters in November, and it restores voting rights to most felons who have served their sentences, other than murderers and sex offenders. Voters approved Amendment 4, but then the question is, there's some debate over when does it actually take effect. Proponents of it say the law is clear, and someone who registers wants to register in January should be able to do so. Others say that there needs to, election supervisors wanted, you recall, to have some more guidance from the legislature on it. Here's what, and Ron DeSantis was opponent of Amendment 4 during the campaign, and here's his opinion on whether it should just take effect without any action by the legislature.
I don't think that it's self-executing. I mean, I think that if you look, they have exceptions for who's not eligible for that. They do not enumerate the statutes that you could violate. And so there just needs to be implementing language. I don't see any way around that, regardless of whether you want it, you know, all to be implemented tomorrow or whether you're trying to kind of frustrate it. But bottom line is there's going to be a law that we're going to have to pass in order to comply with that amendment.
The obvious question arises whether the legislature or the governor are going to drag their feet and try to frustrate this from happening. And he said that they're obligated to do it. And he doesn't see any way that it can't happen during this legislative session coming up, which begins in March and ends in May. So according to Governor-elect DeSantis, the implementing legislation for it should be in place by the beginning of May when the legislative session ends. But that's definitely something to watch, considering that a lot of the Republicans in the legislature were opposed to Amendment 4. I think it's worth noting, it passed with 64.6%. So obviously there were a lot of voters who voted for Ron DeSantis and voted Republican, but also voted for this amendment. John Kennedy, do you see any prospects of snags or delays in this?
Well, I have a feeling that the Democrats are going to look at this very closely as far as how the implementation is. Democrats look to this Amendment 4 as being something that's really going to help them expand their registration base, with a lot of ex-felons now being able to vote. And there's an implication that maybe a lot of them will be registering Democrat. So I think the Democrats are going to be a little bit paranoid about anything that the Republicans do that could be, leave the appearance that they're not fully enacting this or not acting swiftly on it, whether it comes to promoting the amendment through the Department of Corrections or the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and Secretary of State's offices, or really just what's going on in Tallahassee as far as enacting it.
And Zach, from your marathon session with the election supervisors, you think that they'll end up the guidance they need out of this legislative session?
Well, they definitely wanted some guidance. They seem somewhat confused about how this is going to be implemented, but there was some debate about whether that just needs to be sort of administrative guidance through the Department of Elections, or if there actually needs to be some legislation that implements this. Outgoing Secretary of State Ken Detzner said at that conference that he does believe the legislature needs to weigh in. But the groups who push this say that there is no need whatsoever. And in fact, they might challenge it if the legislature starts meddling in this. I talked to the person with the League of Women Voters who spearheaded their efforts on this. And she told me that it is plain on its face, that you don't need to do anything to implement it. And that if you start messing around with this, it could really be interpreted as, going against the will of the voters, and that there might even be legal challenges that arise out of it.
All right. Another issue to watch in the coming months. Two other clips I want to play real briefly from this interview. One is, Florida's had Republican governors for the last 20 years. And in a lot of ways, Ron DeSantis was campaigning on continuing their policies. He talked about continuing the momentum economically of Rick Scott's administration. But I asked him, is there any way that you think you're going to be different from the last 20 years of Republican governors? And here's an answer he gave me.
I will have as many court picks on the first day than Rick Scott and Jeb Bush in 16 years had combined, or the same amount. Jeb had two, Rick had one. So I think the courts will be an important part of that. And then I think just where we are with some of the issues I talked about in the campaign, like water quality and some of these projects, I think the public wants to see more action there. I've pledged to do more action, but then also, I have the pathway to be able to work constructively with the federal government to hopefully bring some of the infrastructure, water infrastructure projects to fruition, or at least get them to where we know that this is going to work. And if we can do that after all these, and it's been Democrats have not been successful with this either, because right, we had Democrat governors forever. But I think that could be something that would really set me apart from both the Democrat and Republican governors we've had over the last 40 years.
It's a pretty interesting answer. First, he's talking about the three Supreme Court picks that he's going to have, and we talked about that on the podcast before. But it's interesting that the first issue that he brings up is as kind of distinguishing himself from other governors he thinks could be these water issues. And he mentioned, the pathway, the relationship he has with President Trump that he believes will help him succeed on these issues, where, as he mentioned, not just Republican governors, but Democratic governors over the last four decades have failed. What did you think of that answer, John Kennedy?
Yeah, it is interesting. I think it shows that DeSantis, I think, also sees that fixing the state's water problems, or at least addressing them somehow, is critical to the future of the state's economy. Tourism is still a huge driver of everything in Florida. And I think the idea that people around the world are looking at Florida and correlating it with red tide and blue-green algae, that is not a good tourist attraction. So I think he really realizes at this point that his administration is going to be the success of it is going to be contingent on addressing this water issue somehow.
What'd you think of that, Zach?
I think it's smart. I mean, I think to a large degree, DeSantis really needed to do that because he talked so much about it on the campaign, cleaning up the environment. So he would really be going back on his campaign promises if he didn't follow through with this. But it's also smart politics, smart policy. This is important for the state. And it's also something that has a lot of bipartisan support, cleaning up the environment, Republicans, Democrats, nobody wants dirty water. So, Rick Scott focused on jobs and the economy. That's a bipartisan issue that everybody cares about. Jeb Bush focused a lot on education and reforming and improving education, a bipartisan issue that a lot of people care about. And the environment is another bipartisan issue. And in a state like Florida, where you really have close elections, focusing on something that you can get both sides behind could be critical if he wants to win re-election.
For sure. Last little clip I want to play was, when we were almost finished talking, he raised the this was, as we've mentioned many times, this was a very nationalized campaign that he won, and millions of dollars were spent advertising on each side, and interested groups tearing the candidates down. And yet he was kind of making the argument that people don't really know him yet, which is kind of an interesting proposition. But here's what he said about that and just kind of building his own brand. He didn't use that word, but going forward.
Now people are going to get to know me more for me. I mean, it's a 2-month campaign. A lot of people just, you know, they didn't necessarily, you know either of us that well.
Sure.
So it was a very nationalized governor's race.
Yeah.
And I think that now we have the opportunity to really, you know, do a lot of stuff, be very active. People see that. And then, you know, you're kind of building your own record going forward.
Indeed, he will be building his own record starting on January 8th. And you'll want to continue following Gatehouse Media and the podcast to see how he builds that record. But right now, I believe I hear some familiar, funky, royalty-free music playing again. That means it's time to return to our Pick a Number segment. And note takers will recall the wide variety of numbers we had. We'll go lowest to highest. We'll start with me. I had the number 0. 0 is the number of times that Andrew Gillum is mentioned in a 44-count indictment that just came down in Tallahassee. You recall during the campaign, a lot of issue about the FBI investigation of Tallahassee while Gillum was mayor. This week, an indictment came down against one of the city commissioners here, Scott Maddox, also a former Florida Democratic Party chairman, and another city official, charging them with a variety of wrongdoing. But Andrew Gillum was not mentioned, and he had said during the campaign that he was not a target of the FBI investigation, or he'd been assured of that. I don't know. You never know whether more stuff is other shoes are going to drop. But Gillum is certainly not mentioned in this. You know, to the extent that damaged his campaign, at least he has some can take some measure of vindication, I suppose, from not being named in this blockbuster indictment here in Tallahassee. John Kennedy, what was your number 9? What is that?
Yeah, George, mine was 9%, as in that's how much the U.S. dollar has risen in value against other currencies since April of this year. The Florida Senate's Budget Committee learned that this week during a presentation on the state's economic outlook. It's understandable to ask, so what? Well, Florida is a tourist-driven state, and a stronger dollar tends to keep foreign visitors away. Already 13% of the state's total sales tax collection comes from tourism, and a dip in foreign visitors would bite into that. It's really just one of the many factors facing the new legislature and Governor-elect DeSantis when they start putting budgets together next year. And, you know, even if Wall Street stops what has been a roller coaster lately.
Wow. Okay. Something new to worry about. Okay. And then our final number and most perplexing one is by Zach Anderson, and that is the number 138,872. Zach Anderson, what's that number mean?
George, that's the number of federal workers in Florida, according to the Labor Department, as of June 2017. With President Trump and Chuck and Nancy fighting this week over the federal budget and looking like potentially there could be a federal shutdown if Trump doesn't get his money for the border wall, it's worth looking at how that could impact Florida. So a lot of federal workers in Florida. Now, most federal workers even wouldn't be impacted by a shutdown because about 75% of the government is funded through 2019. But there are a number of agencies that are not funded. The Department of Agriculture, Department of Interior, Department of Transportation. Department of Transportation has 2,500 workers in Florida. Department of Agriculture has about 1,500. Department of Interior has about 1,100. That includes the national parks like Everglades National Park. So safe to say that there's probably thousands of federal workers in Florida who could be affected if there is a federal shutdown. Funding expires on Friday, December 21st for these agencies. Just a little bonus fact really quickly. We've talked about Joe Gruters on this podcast. He's the Sarasota GOP chairman who is in line to be Republican Party of Florida's next chair, in big part because of his close relationship with Trump. Well, Joe Gruters leveraged that relationship to get his wife a job at the Department of Agriculture, which could now be impacted by this shutdown. So it might not be a very happy Christmas in the Gruters family if his wife is not getting paid.
Wow. 3 straight podcasts with Gruters mentions in it. You're not going to get that on any other podcast. Well, that wraps up another Inside Florida Politics podcast. As always, it's my honor to be your host. I'm George Bennett from the Palm Beach Post. I've been here at a historic summit in the Tallahassee, CEO by Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy, and by Sarasota Herald Tribune Politics Editor Zach Anderson. Also, we've been assisted in West Palm Beach, even though I'm not there, hard at work this week, shoveling out all those clips.
Eclipse, Thomas Cordy, and as always in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, our audio production director, Adam Fish. Thank you.